This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back, one and all, to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Adirola, very lucky to be joined on a momentous legal day that saw the initial testimony of one Stormy Daniels. I'm joined today by Trey. Trey, back at it. Great to have you here.
What's up, man? Glad to be back amongst the fire breathers, the Dragon Squad. Let's do it.
You are. We have a lot that obviously we're going to talk about. I know the last time we talked, you were very busy, packed schedule, touring. What's on the horizon now?
Yeah, you know, still touring, always at it. Next weekend I'll be in Oklahoma City, then Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and then a whole bunch of other places all the rest of the year and then beyond. That's at TreyCrowder.com, TreyCrowder.com. If you want to come see me.
Okay, all over the place. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, everyone check it out. We do have a lot of news to talk about, but as we've been doing recently, I just want to quickly give everyone an update on our first ever Dragonathon member gifting drive. People have been going crazy with gifting YouTube memberships. In fact, as of right now, we are apparently just like 26 gifts away from our goal of 500 for the month. And when we reach that goal, all of you will quickly come to regret it, because I will be dyeing my hair purple. You all think you want that, but I'm not sure you've thought about it enough. But anyway, we're gonna see what it looks like because we're almost there. I also wanna let you know the current status of the leaderboard. Obviously, those who end the month having gifted the most subs, the top five, are gonna get access to some special individual rewards. And right now it looks like this. Original member Gabby is at 60 gifted memberships. Voxella sitting in second at 50. Lady F and T in third at 40. Alembican, sorry for the mispronunciation of the name last time, at number four with 30. Kide rounding out the top five with 25. And then we have a three-way tie, Moondragon, Jill Jedden, and Joe Gutierrez, all with 20 gifted subs. Kimmy Corey Jr. at 15. And then there are seven people tied in 8, 9, and 10. Jen Welch, LaShawn Lewis, and Bronco, T. Underhill, Ruby Dooby Doo Dragon, BH, and Swedane Dragon. Thank you to all of you for doing that gifting. And I see right now in Twitch, Chris Huggy is gifting subs as well. So no matter where you look, Twitch, YouTube, people being great ambassadors for the show, for the network, and for our whole thing that we're trying to achieve here. So thank you to all of you. We'll have more updates too. Oh, I also want to thank people who gifted subs in the pre-port. Green, Meg, Acid Rain, Jay Fergie, all gifting subs during the pre-port. I didn't see it because I was showing the ridiculous video of Christy Gnome, unfortunately, but thank you for gifting those subs. And with that, Trey, you ready to talk about some news?
Let's get into it, please.
Okay, let's do it. The storm is coming. Actually, it's already here. Stormy Daniels began testifying this morning, and you have to wonder throughout it what Donald Trump was thinking. We had, obviously we can't see it, but we had some initial reports saying that while he's been pretty bored throughout the trial so far, obviously falling asleep quite frequently, not today. He was described as, quote, looking like his face was going to crack from tension, which is rough. And I want to walk you through all of the major highlights of what happened today, because look, some of it is spicy and funny, and I like it for that reason. But some of it, I think, is actually very important for getting into some of the foundational allegations of this trial about why the hush money payment happened, what Donald Trump was thinking about, what his motivation was. Was it a personal thing? Was it a thing having to do with the election? I think there's a lot of that here. So first, we had a funny moment where she described him emerging from his hotel suite wearing silk or satin pajamas like Hugh Hefner. She asked him to change and he returned in more standard dress clothes, which already should be a pretty strong signal to Donald Trump at the time that this is not supposed to go in the direction he wanted. She was there to talk business. She asked you to change. No should mean no, but anyway, Maggie Haberman, who was live tweeting the proceedings, said that Trump looked angry during much of this. He doesn't like feeling or appearing weak or powerless. But that was really, that was what was on offer today. He was not allowed to say anything. He also is not allowed to tweet, you know, the wrong sort of stuff about her. So he was really put in a difficult position here. And the whole time, everyone's trying to figure out what are the jurors thinking about Stormy Daniels' testimony. A lot of people were saying she was kind of going on at length and maybe like distracting herself. That could reflect poorly. Some of the stuff she was saying that was very embarrassing of Trump could theoretically lead to the jurors becoming a little bit sympathetic towards Donald Trump. But they also described her as having a near photographic memory, that she could remember almost everything about Trump's suite and his clothing, the nature of the conversation. He apparently asked about the business aspects of her industry. Remember, this meeting was supposed to be about business. He asked about unions, residuals, health insurance, as well as about STD testing, which I'm sure she must have loved that question in the moment. Trump is a well-known germaphobe, we're reminded. She was asked, by the way, if they had sex without a condom. And she goes on eventually to say that they did. In any event, I want to get to some of the biggest individual moments. So she says that during her dinner with Trump, this is before that final meeting, she asked about his wife. He told her, she says, not to worry because the two did not, quote, even sleep in the same room. They'd, of course, been married for about a year at this point. He apparently shaked his head slightly and gave a sour look as she said that he didn't sleep in the same room as his wife. It doesn't seem like the most surprising thing. They lived in different states for a significant period of time while he was in the White House. And I also just want to add this before we get into our first bit of discussion. Stormy said that Trump told her she reminded him of his daughter, presumably Ivanka, quote, she's smart and blonde and beautiful, and people underestimate her as well. Now look, you could say he loves Ivanka. He sees things in her that he likes in Ivanka, and he's saying she's underestimated like Ivanka. And like, I like that, the idea that she's underestimated. A lot of the reaction or testimony was saying she seems to have not only a photographic memory, but a great like attention to detail. And also she talks about her long experience, not only as an actress, but as a writer and a director and being in all sorts of areas of the business. That's why she wanted to have the business meetings with him. But then you remember that like allegedly, he only like pretended to be interested in doing business with her so that he could sleep with her. So if the Ivanka thing is genuinely about her being underestimated, he's underestimating her. He doesn't care about the business at all. He just wants to hook up with her. And so that's sick. Now there's another interpretation of the thing about Ivanka that's theoretically a little bit sicker, but Trey, I want your initial thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I feel like you're like, oh, you know, that could be sweet, say something like that about your daughter and that. But people, it isn't by itself weird to say that type of thing, to invoke your daughter's name necessarily. But it is weird if you then like pull your junk out, which is what he did. That's how I feel about it. Like, you know, I don't feel like you can interpret it really in a much more innocent context, but maybe that's just me. But this whole thing is so wild. I have to keep reminding myself that as ridiculous as all this is, it is like a genuinely significant historical event. You know what I mean? Like this is going to be like written about and stuff, and who knows what else. Like they're going to be like an Aaron Sorkin like movie, like courtroom drama, but about this. Oh, no. You know what I mean? Which would be wild, like a Few Good Men style, like, you know, heavily dramatic courtroom scene, but it's about, but you know, it's about Jack Nicholson's wiener and he keeps like falling asleep and farting and stuff the whole time. Like it's hard to, what kind of tone do you strike if you're trying to make a movie about this? You know what I mean? It's like,
man,
the whole reality is atonal lately. You know what I mean? We shuffle back and forth between like, you know, important, existentially terrifying, objectively hilarious, completely absurd, and all these things and more every hour in 2024. So,
I mean, Trey, I don't have a great answer for that because I don't even know tonally how to get through this show, let alone through a feature film. But I do understand what you're saying. I do want to say that while some of this stuff obviously has gotten into the sexual stuff, and there will be a little bit more of that, there have been limitations on that. And one area that we are not going to have testimony in is that prosecutors apparently said that she would not describe his genitalia as she did in her book, Full Disclosure. Okay, some people, we weren't sure if that was going to happen, but that's not going to happen. That means that the juror is not going to have to hear it. And obviously, you viewers aren't going to have to hear it again because it's not going to come up in the trial. Just kidding, I'm going to quote it anyway. She described in that book Trump's penis as, quote, smaller than average, but not freakishly small, which is pretty much what every guy wants to hear. He knows he has an unusual penis. It has a huge mushroom head like a toadstool. I lay there annoyed that I was getting blanked by a guy with Yeti pubes and a blank like the mushroom character in Mario Kart. It may have been the least impressive sex I'd ever had, but clearly he didn't share that opinion. And you know what? I'm glad that they're not going to be, obviously I read it to mostly bother people who watch the show, but I'm glad that they didn't read that. Because I don't know that it's necessarily that important for the jury to know that. And honestly, like, it could potentially lead to some sympathy. Because that sounds pretty bad. It's not just descriptive, it's sort of mocking. And look, she went through a terrible ordeal as a result of interacting with Donald Trump. But still, I'm not sure that people necessarily needed to know that. But that's it. Any quick comment on that?
I mean, I agree with, I'm law dumb, but I see how legally it's not entirely relevant. We don't have to dig into that, but I guess I am a little bit disappointed just because of how much I know it has to truly upset him. I know he's upset by these whole proceedings, but I feel like that part of it would really get digged. I mean, even like the 2016 election, run up to that, didn't he get into a whole like penis size thing in the debate?
On the debate stage.
In the debate stage, right. Yeah. So he's like one of the most insecure people alive and he's a man. So like, what better subject matter to invoke a massive meltdown than this? It would truly test his resolve. But I get how we don't really have to go there. So I suppose it's fine with me.
We don't have to. I did because the audience often attacks me and I take every opportunity to counterpunch like Donald Trump. But anyway.
Well, no, we should absolutely go. I've already said wiener like four different times. But
you
like,
have actually five now.
Yeah, but you need a little counter in the bottom of the screen, in the corner of the screen. But I'm saying, I get why they, in the context of an actual criminal trial, don't need all that. But, more popcorn stuff as far as I'm concerned. Bring it on.
100%.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Let's get in now. That was sort of initially. She did the testimony, they went to break, and then she came back. Stormy Daniels can testify to a lot of what happened during that initial encounter that set the stage for the payments that would lead to this whole trial. She says at one point that she went to the bathroom and came out, and that Trump was in the bedroom waiting for her in his boxer shorts and a t-shirt, sort of between her and the door. She describes it as not him explicitly blocking the path to the door, but he was in the path to the door. She had been planning to leave at that point. And she was asked by the prosecutor, did you at some point end up on the bed having sex with him? She said yes. When she described the position they were in, the defense objected and the objection was sustained. And this is really the story of the rest of Stormy Daniels' testimony. She was describing, sometimes in more detail than most people wanted, what happened, and there were a lot of objections. That's not surprising. The fact that Donald Trump's legal team is going to object to a lot of this totally makes sense. He's boiling inside, so they have to, or they'll be fired on the spot. But what might be a little bit surprising is that the judge was almost entirely on board for these objections. And not just the objections, the judge had some objections of his own. He repeatedly admonished Stormy Daniels to slow down, to stay on subject, and to just answer the question. She's, very media. She's done a lot of interviews and she's an entertainer. So she would tend to talk a lot and add a lot of detail that wasn't necessarily directly germane to the question. And he wasn't always playing ball with it. Now, we still got a lot of details regardless. She described herself being traumatized by the encounter, wondering, quote, how I got to the place of having sex with him. She does point out, as she had in past interviews, that she didn't say no, quote, because I didn't say anything at all. That also came up again when she was asked about whether a condom had been used. She was asked by the prosecutor, did you say anything about that? No, the fact that there was no condom. And she says, no, again, I didn't say anything at all. I didn't say anything at all. And there's a little bit more. She says that she didn't object in the moment, but she didn't enjoy it. She felt that there was a power dynamic between the two, an imbalance in the power dynamic. And look, she feels that way. So did Trump. That's why this entire alleged thing was set up. He felt like, as he described with Billy Bush, he would be able to do pretty much whatever he wanted. She desperately apparently needed him his business help or something on getting on The Apprentice or working together. Although interestingly, she points out in her testimony that he raised the possibility of her being on The Apprentice first, not her. Now he has tried to pitch her, and others have in the right wing media, as just being like a grifter. She's just trying to get something out of him. But she's saying that it was his idea, that he basically tried to dangle it in front of her for this. And another one more thing before we discuss that I think could really get to the core issue of what were the payments made for? Was it so Melania wouldn't find out, or was it to affect the outcome of the election? And she says that when they met in person for the last time many years ago, okay, before today, they finally meet again. He said that he didn't say anything about her needing to keep it quiet. Okay. And that is interesting, because if you're the jury and you buy that, then many years go by where he didn't seem to care whether it came out.
Right.
And then in 2016, he cared enough to pay her off. Now, Melania finding out's a disaster in 2008, 2009, 2010 and on. But it's only an electoral disaster in 2015 and 2016. And so again, I don't know if they're going to buy this. I don't know if they're going to find her to be trustworthy. But this isn't just salacious detail. It does actually bear on the prosecution's case. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what are the possible explanations for that time gap between when he started doing this? You know what I mean? Like, why? I mean, what you just brought up, what is the explanation for that? If your defense is that, well, it was just because he's married. We wanted, but he was married the whole time. He was married and she was pregnant when all this first happened, but he didn't even attempt to silence her until he's running for the highest office in the land. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm law dumb. I don't know what, as a lawyer, what you do in that scenario, how you could possibly try to spin that. But again, also on the objection thing, again, what do I know? But I heard a CNN legal expert saying earlier that they would presumably attempt to object as little as possible, because I guess generally that scene is like, they feel like the jury sees that as being overly defensive, or like sees that as weird, like as like implying something when you object a lot. So it's like they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Again, the lawyers are, I think, between like generally accepted legal theory, and then Donald Trump sitting there, like you said, they can feel him wanting to fire them if they don't, you know, stand up for him by objecting in the moment. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it the whole thing seems to be not going well for him, as far as I can tell. But the whole time, since all his legal troubles started, I've been skeptical that anything would ever really happen to him, just because I'm a cynic in that way. And I've lived in this country my whole life, and I just feel like we don't do that sort of thing here. So it's like the further this goes on and the worse it seems to look for him, the more kind of intrigued I get by the whole thing. Like, is he really going to end up wriggling out of this, or something going to actually happen? It's getting wild, getting into the thick of it at this point.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. I'm quite law dumb as well. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that the lawyers, to the extent that he might have good lawyers, once again, finally, for a long time he didn't. Like, even if they think something is in his best interest legally, he's running the show. Mm-hmm. They don't get to decide the thing that's best for him necessarily. So you might be entirely right. Doing a bunch of the objections might look super defensive. But he's the one who's, you know, threatening to fire them or whatever. So we will definitely see. I'm gonna throw out two other details before we move on to other stuff. One, Eric was back in court sitting directly behind Donald Trump. I don't know if I had to guess, I'm not a psychic or whatever, but if I had to guess, I doubt he cares about, I think he knows who his father is. I think that he has known who his father is for a very long time. Hearing all of these details, I mean, I think he's in for a penny, in for a pound, but there was also a reference to calling Stormy Daniels at one point back then, not now, Honey Bunch. And I don't know why, but that just, I don't like anything about this story, but I don't like that either. And I do wonder, you know, obviously the jury's watching this, the nation is watching this. There's also one individual sitting at Mar-a-Lago watching this. And I just wonder what they're thinking.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all.
Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Said you'll go to jail if you violate it. And frankly, you know what? Our Constitution is much more important than jail. It's not even close. I'll do that sacrifice any day.
So Donald Trump is apparently like so fired up to violate his gag order and attack witnesses rather than trying to win the case on the merits that he feels like going to prison is standing up for the Constitution. I will remind everyone that gag orders are fully constitutional. They aren't necessary. They aren't generally necessary in the way that they have been in this case, because generally people do not willfully violate them as often as he has. But the idea that he would like happily go to prison is something that he has been pushing for some time. A while back, he truthed that he would gladly become a quote modern day Nelson Mandela, which you going to jail for violating your gag order over the hush money payments does not make you Nelson Mandela. I need you to Wikipedia Nelson Mandela. You can maybe learn something, Donald Trump. But anyway, he says that he wants it and it might come. You know, just yesterday, the judge found him in contempt for a 10th time and once again warned him that violating the gag order could result in him going to prison. But what's interesting is that he's not the only one who seems like sort of excited about the possibility. Other Republicans have been flooding the airwaves, all of them swearing that it would in fact be a good thing if he were to go to prison. Let's take a look at this.
I hope they do arrest Trump. I hope they put him in jail because that does guarantee that he wins. Please, please, please. This is becoming the greatest third act of any political story.
If this judge actually goes forward and puts him in jail, think about the future for America. It is dark, it is bleak, and I don't think people will react very well to that, Sean.
By what right does an appointed local judge put somebody who is the nominee of their party, former president, in prison? But he's openly told us twice now in 2 weeks that it's going to happen. And I think it's very dangerous at the most basic of levels. Just ask yourself, what would it be like to be Trump in prison in New York?
What would that be like? To be clear, I still don't think that we're going to get there necessarily, but I love how fundamentally elitist that argument is. Like, by what right does this judge have the ability to put a private citizen who used to be president in prison if he's found guilty by a jury of his peers for having committed federal crimes? I mean, I think by the only right is a judge. That's literally what he's supposed to do. If you do not believe that the rich and powerful should have to abide by the law like we do, then just save us all a bunch of time and just say that. Just say that. They're better than us. They are our nobility. You pesky judges, stay away and let them do whatever they want. That is clearly your actual position, Gingrich, as well as Laura Trump and all the rest. So just say that. Just say that. Troy, what do you make of all this? Do you think he wants to go to prison? Would it guarantee his victory, as Greg Gutfeld confidently asserts?
I don't know. That whole dynamic has been confusing to me from the very beginning with them, where they talk about, like, on the one hand, they say, like, the only reason any of this is even happening is because they're trying to torpedo his, you know, chances in the election. The Biden administration, the Justice Department has been weaponized to like keep him from winning the election. That's the only reason any of this is even happening right now. They say that. And then they also say that because of this happening, the result is going to be that he's going to win in a landslide and going to crush it in the election, you know, in November, the more this goes on. So it's like, is it good or bad or what? It's like, you know, they both love and hate everything in equal measure. Well, no, they don't love things. They get enraged by things, I guess, all the time. But yeah, the Nelson Mandela part too, I was thinking about that earlier. The fact that he compared himself to him doesn't surprise me at all, but it just says so much about a huge chunk of our country that their version of Nelson Mandela is a, you know, spray tan serial philanderer who can't stop complaining on the toilet about being held criminally accountable for, you know, the scandal he engaged in with the slimiest tabloid rag in this country to cover up his myriad sexual indiscretions in the run up to an election. It's like, yeah, that makes you hero of the people. You know, you and Nelson, Nelson Mandela, same thing. Mural of him and Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela, all of whom are exactly the same when it comes to being wrongly imprisoned. But there's millions of people in this country who like legitimately feel that way and see it that way. Yeah. And that's truly insane, man. I don't know what else to say about that.
100%. I agree. I don't know. For some of them, I don't think that love is really a thing that drives love. I would describe it more as like being horny and angry.
Thank you. I think
it feels in the belly a little bit like love. It's not quite the same
thing. No, I agree. As soon as I said love, I was like, that's not right. These people are not powered by love. But you know what I mean? It's like they talk out of both sides of their mouth is what I'm trying to say. It's like they're both enraged by something, but also like excited by it at the same time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, please let him go to prison. But also they're furious that there's a possibility that he could go to prison, and they feel those things concurrently throughout. Yeah. It's wild. Cognitive dissonance made flesh, you know, that's their whole thing.
Yeah. With Greg Gutfeld, I wish I could know. Does he actually believe that this would get, by the way, I'm not sure that it wouldn't help him in the election. We're a messed up country. Maybe it would. But it seems pretty bold to say that it definitely would win him the election, especially when you like acknowledge, and you have to, that Greg Gutfeld knows that he did it. He knows that every aspect of this story is true. He just doesn't care because he does not believe that, again, the rich and powerful should be subject to the same laws as every one of them knows that he doesn't. Not a single one of them lays in bed at night and thinks, President Trump, this is lawfare. He's being unjustly persecuted. Nobody thinks that. None of these surrogates for him think that. That's why they're really not even arguing. They're not arguing that it should have been logged as a legal expense or whatever. They're not arguing that he didn't pay it. They're not arguing that he didn't sleep with her. They're just saying it shouldn't matter that he did. That's it. Okay, we're gonna take a short break and mix it up, talk about something else on the other side of this. Okay, everyone, prepare yourself as we launch into what has weirdly become my favorite story in the news the past week or two. Take a look at this.
And I understand that they're attacking me for it, Jesse.
Yeah, they are. So they're also attacking you. I guess you said you met Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. Did you meet him?
I've been to the DMZ. I've been to North Korea. You know, people, I don't talk about my conversations with world leaders. And so when I looked at the book and I saw that excerpt, I decided to make the change to the content of the book, and that's been done.
So you didn't have a conversation with Kim when you were at the DMZ?
I don't have conversations about my conversations with world leaders. I've been working on policy for 30 years, Jesse, and that's what most people don't remember about me is I'm old. I'm a mom, I'm a grandma, I've got three little grandbabies.
You're not that old. So maybe you did have a conversation with Kim, but you don't want to talk about
it. I will not talk about my personal conversations with any world leaders. It just won't, and I'm not going to do it.
What have you...
Yeah, I bet you won't. The issue is that you already have. You already talked about the conversations. That's why we're having this talk right now, Kristi Noem, is because you wrote in your book, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me. That's not even just mentioning that it happened. That's getting into the man's mind, which is dangerous territory. And so she did talk about it. And now she doesn't want to talk about it for fairly obvious reasons. And my favorite thing about that video is that this is Jesse Waters. And Jesse Waters is not one of those people that's gonna like try to keep it together and really maintain the fiction that's happening here. Where Kristi Noem, she's not lying. She's answering the question. The mainstream media may not like it, but she's answering. No, he cannot hide from his face that she's lying to him, and he knows it. He doesn't care. He's not interested in whether these politicians tell the truth or not. That's why he throws out that like condescending, so maybe you did have a talk with him. He knows that she didn't. He's having fun with it, okay? I think most Americans are not. The idea that a governor could go on TV over and over and over again and refuse to acknowledge that she lied in her book and had to take the section out as a result of that. But it's just, Trey, it's so laughable. She keeps doing the interviews. She keeps getting asked these questions. Do you think she thinks what she's saying is convincing or distracting? Because I don't think anyone, lefty or, you know, like, out and out fash is watching this and thinking, yeah, no, she's nailing this. This is a great response to the hole that she's dug for herself.
Yeah, well, I think it's a requirement for a lot of these people in these positions to be at least partially, if not full board delusional. So I think she's got that going on. But also she has just one of the all time worst barometers for when and when not to lie. You know what I mean? While writing this book, it's like, an easily disprovable lie about meeting a world leader that's gonna, you know, get you in this hot water. She chooses to lie there. But a story from years ago that the public never needed to find out about you horrifically murdering a sweet puppy in the backyard. It's like, that's when you lie. You should lie there, or at least just like, at least not tell the truth, however you look at that. But it's like, that's when she comes clean, and then she lies in these other cases. Just everything about her is backwards. But yeah, the whole thing, she seems to have horrifically misjudged. I don't know how she's made it this far with this poor of an understanding of like PR, or how she comes across to people, or what they're going to be into, or how things are going to be received and all that. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't, she's been around for a while now. And I mean, you know, from my perspective, she's done plenty of dumb stuff, but like, not like this and not all at once, you know? So yeah, it's been a wild, wild run she's on here.
Yeah, at this point, I'm less interested in whether she's met Kim Jong-un and more interested, have you met a person? Like, have you talked to people before? Because it seems like these are the first conversations you've ever had. I don't even understand the lie, man. You're governor of South Dakota. Why would anyone expect you to have met with Kim Jong-un? Why would you need to? You're in South Dakota. Do South Dakota stuff, okay? Do that stuff. The Kim Jong-un stuff is obviously beyond you. You're a terrible, terrible liar. Like, even the cover story that she is pretending is supposed to convince us that she didn't do anything wrong. Like, when it was brought to my attention, I had it taken out. Again, we'll never say why she had it taken out, since she's not saying that it was a lie. It wasn't brought to her attention there. She narrated the audiobook. It was brought to her attention then, or theoretically, it was brought to her attention when she wrote it in the book. I know that there's no pinning her down, because she's just gonna go to her grave not admitting that she lied and was caught. But I would just ask her, here, I'm gonna put up this graphic. I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, did you type those words? Well, I'm not gonna talk about conversations. I'm not asking you about conversations. I'm asking you about you at a keyboard. Did your fingers press the buttons required to make those words appear in a Google Doc? Did you do that or did you not? And again, she would do her little, I'm a greased snake or whatever. I hate the entire thing, because I went at length in the pre-port, so I'm not gonna do it again today. We should not necessarily at this late date in the American experiment expect much from our elected officials, but I do still think, and perhaps I'm naive, we should expect more than this. That's what I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're, you know, I'm surprised that she's getting as much pushback from all this as she has been from the right. I mean, because of what you just like, I mean, apparently you're right. There is a line, I guess. And apparently she has crossed it. I wonder if she was a man, big strong man governor of South Dakota, if it would be quite as you know, vehement, this pushback she's getting. Because I mean, I thought, you know, I didn't know where the line was with them, with her base, with like MAGA world. You know what I mean? I know not everybody is Trump, but his whole thing about, you know, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and wouldn't lose a single vote. And they do seem to operate that way. And I thought she was like one of their people, you know. So I mean, I guess I'm a little surprised, like I said, that she found the line, but at least it still exists somewhere, apparently.
I think that you're probably onto something with the gender thing, because like, I personally think that Donald Trump could shoot cricket on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. I think that he'd be perfectly fine. And it's so weird, the stuff that you can sort of get traction on pushing back and what you can't. Like, she'll keep doing the interviews. She said that she met Kim Jong-un, and so she's facing all this pushback. Tom Cotton encouraged his followers to murder anti-war protesters. And I have not seen a single follow-up question from that. So it's a weird country we live in. That said, while Jesse Waters was like trying to do some damage control for Kristi Noem, it's Eric Bolling who is gonna take it to what I have to imagine is the most laughable low point. Take a look at this.
I've also written a couple of books, and I know how the process works. You write some chapters. You don't write the whole book at once. You write a chapter or two. Mm-hmm. You send it to the editors, and they edit. They read it. They add. They subtract. And here's my question. The editor. Mm-hmm. The editor. Was she possibly a plant, a liberal plant? Because I'm not sure either one of these stories, the dog story, the North Korea story, seems like the Kristi Noem I know.
No, the buck always stops with me. I take my own full responsibility. I wrote this book, and I take the responsibility for what's in it. It's a great book, Eric. I hope everybody reads it and buys it.
Yeah, go F yourself, Kristi Noem. The buck stops with me. I take responsibility. Oh, why was it taken out? I'm not saying why it was taken out. I'm not gonna do this. Like, she wanted to appear tough and she wanted to appear worldly. She couldn't sell either of those things. Now she wants to appear honest as she lies to everyone's face over and over and over again. And now she made the wise decision in this case of going in front of Eric Bolling, who is, I guess, dumber than all of the rest of the right wingers, because he's asking her stuff about like this, the dog thing doesn't sound like you. She's already been saying for like 2 weeks now that she put it on in there to appear tough, to appear decisive. We're so far past the idea that some lefty liberal plant editor put it there. He's like throwing up defenses of the fake news media or whatever that are so laughable that even Kristi Noem, 20 feet deep in the hole that she's digging for herself, is like, well, no, obviously I can't claim that. That's stupid. What are you talking about, Eric Bolling? But this is what passes for a media when it comes to the right wing. And by the way, she's still doing it. She was interviewed with Stuart Varney this morning. She ended up like getting mad at him because he was asking her questions about this. Why the hell do you think someone is bringing you on to be interviewed, okay? To talk about one of the other chapters of the book? No, we're gonna ask you about the Kim Jong-un thing. We're gonna ask you about the dog. And by the way, and this is my favorite update to this. Apparently, her team told her to stop trying to put the dog story in a book 2 years ago, okay? Apparently, in a prior book, this is not her only book. In a prior book, she wanted to put it in that. And people involved in the writing of the book said that it was in bad taste and could potentially hurt her reputation. But she argued that she thought it would portray her as a decisive person, but the story was ultimately cut. So she, like, there are actual people who are good at their job. People are trained for things like PR and image control and stuff like that. But all of these people are so dense, so arrogant, so just needy that they tell all those people to F off. And that's how you end up in situations like this, Trey.
Yeah, it definitely makes it funnier to me knowing that she has been trying to tell this story for 2 years. She's like, no, I'm telling you, this is my closer. This is the thing. This is going to seal the deal. And her whole team is like, please, for the love of God, never tell anyone that story, you know? And she like keeps firing people, bringing new people in, telling them like, listen, I got this thing. What do you think about this? And the new team is like, what? No, you can't. You could never say that ever, you know? And then finally, like when she's making her big play, her big VP play, she's like, this is the moment. And she throws it out there and gets immediate backlash. And she's just like shocked Pikachu or whatever, you know, when that happens, like, and having to like her then having to know, you know, it's like an ultimate I told you so moment, which is funny, except again, these people are so delusional and in so much denial. I don't know that they can really process those types of moments, which takes a little bit of the fun out of it for me. But if she has any kind of modicum of sensibility left in there, she's got to be feeling pretty stupid after all this. And, you know, that makes me feel better. But yeah, that dude, that guy, I already forgot his name, that Newsmax guy or whatever it was.
Eric Bolling.
Bolling, his theory on it, trying to turn the whole thing into like a Scooby-Doo episode that ends with them, you know, pulling the mask off of her editor and it's AOC or whatever. And then there's a big music drop and they go to commercial. These people are just, it's a truly absurd time to be alive, man. What else can you say? It's wild out here.
I'll close with this. Is there a politician that you like admire or you like have some degree of faith in or whatever, like a politician you like?
You're asking me to answer?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like AOC. When I was in my 20s, like in 2008, I was 22 and I was like, Barack Obama, I genuinely believed is like, this dude is going to be the guy, this guy's going to lead us into the promised land. Like I bought into all that fully. And then, you know, look, I still like Obama, but I was disappointed by a lot. Didn't exactly go that way as we're aware. And that kind of you know, altered how I feel about politicians forevermore. I kind of said at the time, is like, I'm never going to put my full faith and heart behind a politician again, even the ones that I do like, you know what I mean? So that's kind of my philosophy on that. Why do you ask?
Well, first of all, I feel almost exactly the same. I still remember him giving the speech at the 2004 DNC.
Right.
And I remember the campaign in 2008. And so I felt much the same. But like, so you mentioned like that right now you like AOC. Mm-hmm. Like if AOC did this, wrote something in a book, it was debunked. She did 50 interviews where she just kept refusing to admit that she lied. I'm done.
Right.
I'm done. And maybe that makes me worse at this because I should be willing to accept that she's a massive liar to get what I want politically. But I'm also a human. And so many of the people in our politics are not humans anymore. If you lie to my face like this, I don't care anymore. about this nonsense. When you, and not just a lie, they all lie. I know that they all lie. Don't message me that they lie. Obvious, repeated lies. When you know I already know you're lying and you're lying to me anyway, we should be able to expect more than that. Jesus. And she's just gonna keep doing it. She's just gonna keep doing the interviews. She's just gonna keep implying that, oh, I would never talk about a meeting with a, you know, I just filled my books with the meetings that I've had. I never talk about it. I'm so done with it. I'm so done with it. And we're done with it for right now. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, other news. Sorry, we got a little cut off there, but glad to hear that the show went well. And I'm sure Canadians are used to the fact that a lot of cultural stuff is grounded in the United States.
Yes.
But I like that you're thinking about it. I like that you're thinking about it. Okay, well, everyone, welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us now, what took you so long? You missed a lot, but there is a lot more to come. Hit the like button if you haven't already, and we're gonna launch into this.
Fox News called me an idiot. That was literally their headline. They called me an idiot. But what I've done is expose what was already happening in the dark. And I think the beautiful thing about it is that Democrats have to come clean. They were controlling Mike Johnson anyways. He was giving them everything.
Okay, so full disclosure, Fox News ran an editorial by someone who called her an idiot. Also, fuller disclosure, plenty of people, I'm sure even at Fox News, think that she's an idiot. If you are Marjorie Greene and you do not want to be thought of or called an idiot, the simple solution is to take yourself out of the public eye. Because unfortunately, every time you open your mouth, every action you take is going to make some people think that. Now, she is obviously in the final stages of trying to get Mike Johnson out of being a speaker. She might be trying to pump the brakes while still trying to raise some money and get some notoriety on the side. It's a bit of a mixed message. I mean, you definitely saw, even in that little appearance with Steve Bannon, some conspiracy theories about him supposedly giving the Democrats everything they want, speaking as a person who has voted Democratic. I can think of a few things I haven't gotten, actually, like almost everything on my agenda. But anyway, she apparently met with Mike Johnson and she had some demands, okay? She said she wants a guarantee that he would not pass more military aid for Ukraine, a pledge to defund special counsel Jack Smith's prosecutions of President Donald Trump, and that, quote, Johnson only advanced legislative priorities that have the support of the majority of the majority and adherence to the so-called Hastert rule, okay? She goes on to say, I have been patient, I have been diligent, I have been steady, and I have been focused on the facts, and none of that has changed. So I just had a long discussion with the speaker in his office about ways to move forward for a Republican-controlled House of Representatives. We're talking to him tomorrow based on our discussion today. Now, we're gonna move to Mike Johnson in just a second, because he has thus far survived this assault, and it looks like he will going forward. But look at that madness, man. Mike Johnson is a legitimate crazy person of a right winger. And yet when you have people like Marjorie Greene, the simple fact that he is doing the basic stuff that any speaker would do is used as a representation of the fact that the Democrats control everything. What are the Democrats getting? Like the aid for Ukraine that we've passed multiple times under different speakers that were not Mike Johnson? Like is that the linchpin of this massive conspiracy that she thinks is going on? He helped to kill the border security bill, the same as she did. The government is barely functioning, just like she wants. And yet she pushes for more. Now, here is his response to all of this.
You do what Marjorie Taylor Greene is asking, which is to defund the special counsel's investigation and criminal case.
Well, look, there's been a lot of discussion here amongst House Republicans in particular for a long, long time about the abuse of the special counsels. I mean, this is a tradition that goes back about a quarter century. Janet Reno, I believe, is the one that originated this idea. And the problem that we have, see, Congress has an oversight responsibility, and we've got to make sure that the justice system is maintained well, and that's our job. We also have the power of the purse. And the problem with this that many of us see with the special counsel a statute is that it goes outside of the regular appropriations process. It's sort of individually or self-funded. And so there's discussion this week, as there has been for a long, long time, about what is the most effective way for Congress to take the reins of that and ensure that the special counsels are not abusing the law themselves. And there's a lot of ideas about that. Discussions this week are nothing new, but we're looking very intently at it.
I love that, like, he's defending himself, but he's also having to explain to her that what she's asking him to do is not a thing that he can actually do. And she doesn't understand that. And Mike Johnson, you need to know that she's not going to understand that. She's not capable of the basic idea of understanding. Like, she just says whatever she wants. She talks about being grounded to the facts. She has never once been related to the facts. And so she continues to push for this. He still looks as safe as he has throughout this process. The Democrats have already announced, Trey, that if there's a vote, they're probably going to protect him so that, you know, governance can continue at least in some minor form between now and the election. But what do you make of this fight?
I don't know, the opening quote cracked me up, her complaining about Fox News calling her an idiot. I really liked that. I was disappointed to hear it was an editorial, because at first I was like, oh, you know, the blind squirrel theory as far as Fox News goes. You know what I mean? It's like, even they can do something right, or even they can, you know, make me happy every now and then. But I guess that's kind of a little different. But I'm with you. I'm sure there's plenty of people there who do think she's an idiot on account of how much of an obvious idiot she is. But yeah, I don't know. I hate that there's people like this even in our government at any level, but I kind of do enjoy them having, I have some schadenfreude watching them have to deal with this cancer that they've, like, you know, infected their own party with. As far as I'm concerned, this particular brand of, like, MAGA lunacy, they've let them in the hen house and now they're tearing everything up and they don't even know how to handle it. Clearly, the more, like, if you can call them sane Republicans, you know, they don't have to, they've given them the ammunition they need to tear themselves apart from the inside. And I do think that is kind of funny. But I hate that, again, I hate that as an American, I hate that this is happening in the House of Representatives. And you were saying, like, what does she want from him? What does she expect? I think she expects him to do literally nothing. Like, anything he does, she's going to frame as him working with the Democrats, and she's against that. And it's like, so what does she want? Just for nothing to ever happen, to burn the whole thing down, for the system to not even exist? And in that case, it's like, so what's the point of your job and your position? You know what I mean? You're like an elected official whose whole philosophy is that there should be no government, or at least not, that you shouldn't work to, there should be no bipartisan government. You should never work together to accomplish anything for the people. And it's like, I just don't understand the appeal she has to anyone, I guess, outside of just, like, frothing nonsensical rage, which is, you know, pretty effective electorally in our current climate.
I think that is supposed to be her appeal. I think that she's good at firing up a certain type of person out there, of which there are millions who are similar to her in some ways that I find very distressing. But we should also remember at the end of the day that while she wants government to, you know, just exist to, I don't know, do hearings about DEI or whatever, strip away whatever, you know, reproductive rights remain, it's all, again, in service of the same exact thing that the more reasonable Republicans are in service of. Marjorie Greene is a many times over millionaire. I know it seems crazy considering, you know, everything about her and her vibe and everything. She's there to protect entrenched wealth, the same as all the rest of them. She's more deranged and conspiratorial about it. And she's there to help get the conspiratorial people to have a thing to focus on in government so that they don't notice that nothing is happening to actually help them. And that the only thing that actually gets passed is tax cuts. At the end of the day, it's very similar to the other Republicans. She's just more, like, you know, obviously deranged as she's pushing it. In any event, I want us to talk about one more thing before we close out the show. Why don't we jump? I'm going to set this up before we get into this lad. Democrats are planning a big counterattack on the topic of immigration months after Republicans blocked the border security bill that was largely crafted to give them what they wanted. Here's the first ad.
We did family separation. A lot of people didn't come.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists.
When you say to a family that if you come, we're gonna break you up, they don't come.
They're destroying our country, they're destroying the guts of our country.
The Biden administration unveiling a task force Tuesday to locate and reunite families who were separated at the border under the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy.
They got separated from their parents, violates every notion of who we are as a nation.
They're not people, in my opinion. These are animals.
Within moments of my inauguration, we will begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
It's So look, obviously this is something that they have to talk about. A lot of people do care about what's happening at the border, and I think that it's important for them to focus on it to demonstrate the utter hypocrisy that the right has had on this topic, talking about it as though it's an invasion and then making sure that the government does literally nothing to stop it so that there can be chaos that they can fundraise on and try to get votes on and all that. I mean, that said, to be fair, they started that task force. The last I had heard, they had not been successful in reuniting all the families. Now, obviously, some of that is still on Trump, but it's still a problem. And Biden has been in office for a few years. I'd also say that in trying to get the right to back off of them on immigration, some of the major ways they did that, both for the bill that didn't end up getting passed and the executive orders that did, is by giving the right effectively what they want in the border. Mm-hmm. Like maybe not the exact same sorts of cages that we had for toddlers before, but a lot of the policy in terms of deportations and, you know, streamlining due process and all that was very similar to the Trump years, if not exactly the same as in the Trump years. So look, they are better on some level, but I don't love the idea of them pitching themselves as being like saints on this topic versus Trump. Trump might be Satan, but that doesn't make Biden a saint, I think. But what do you make about this?
Yeah, I know. It is hard to know how to feel. I mean, I like them, you know, the way the Republicans ended up coming out of the whole thing or looking, you know, ineffectual and hypocritical, them highlighting that I think is smart and that they should do that. But like you said, along the way in trying to appease them, they, you know, kind of did a lot of stuff that you would think would alienate what should be their base, the Democrats base, you know. And it's like what are they trying, who are they trying to appeal to? People that are never going to vote Democrat no matter what. And so I don't know, there's a lot of conflicting thoughts I have about the whole thing, but you know, they kind of got saved from themselves by the Republicans' own incompetence at this last juncture, I feel like.
Yeah, we'll see if there's anything more that they can get done on this topic, but it's clearly going to be a focus of the election and they're going to need to come up with a stance that I think differentiates themselves from Trump, but also gives people, you know, some sort of faith that they can manage the situation while also not descending to the barbaric depths that the prior administration did.